Support for WMFE comes from Orlando Science Center, offering four floors of wonder and discovery for families and curious minds of all ages, with exhibits, movies, and live shows that promote learning new skills, exploring fresh ideas, and cultivating a better understanding of the world around us. Tickets and more at osc.org.
Space Bites. You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. While many people think that space food is all freeze-dried snacks and tang, food in outer space is actually a lot tastier than we may think. Astronauts, cosmonauts, and anyone who makes the journey into orbit has a wide range of food to choose from in their orbital pantry, ranging from candy bars to meals that reflect their culture and country. We'll speak with space food scientist Vicky Claris about her new book, Space Bites, Reflections of a NASA Food Scientist, a memoir of her 3 decades at NASA, carefully planning meals for the people that leave the planet. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? Have you ever wondered how you can eat some of your favorite foods in microgravity? Food is essential for astronauts in space for both their physical health, but also so they can feel connected to their home planet while in orbit. The psychology of food plays a key role in space, according to space chef and author Vicky Claris. Her new book, Space Bites, dives into her 3-decade-long career working as a chef and food scientist and her efforts to send a little piece of Earth with the astronauts that leave this planet. Here to talk more about her memoir and her new book, Space Bites, is Vicky Claris. Vicky, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So the book is called Space Bites, Reflections of a NASA Food Scientist. I'm going to start by asking you about space food. And let's think, it's almost dinner time here where I am when we're recording this conversation. If I'm on the International Space Station today, what am I having for dinner?
Well, you get to choose. The core menu that they have right now on Space Station is what we call a standard menu. And so So it's a planned menu, but it's packed pantry style, meaning we put all the meats together, all the veggies together. There's 8 different categories that they have available to them on orbit. And so when they get ready to eat, they're going to go to they're going to go pick what they want from each of those categories. They'll have one of each of those 8 categories open all the time on orbit. And so even though it's a standard menu and we're packing per the menu, they're not eating it that way. They're eating it in the order that they want to. Plus, crew members also have some preference food, smaller volume, that they choose the contents of prior to flight. And that can be, their favorite candy bar that's not part of our menu, or commercial food items, or if they're an international astronaut, like from the European Space Agency or Japan, their country can send some items that will get packed as part of their preference to send to orbit. So basically, NASA is feeding everybody but the cosmonauts. The Russians send the food for the cosmonauts, and NASA's sending the food for everybody else. But they share on orbit. They definitely trade food back and forth.
Like the middle school or elementary school cafeteria, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
I love it. Let's talk about what that food kind of consists of. When I think about it, I think of the freeze-dried space ice cream you get at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Oh. or like a brick of dehydrated something. That's not the kind of food that they're eating up there right now, right?
Well, their freeze-dried food is part of the menu, but I can tell you the freeze-dried food that they have on orbit is designed for them to rehydrate. So they're adding water back prior to consumption. And I would say, just in rough numbers, that freeze-dried is about 25% of the menu. Then thermostabilized, which is basically canned food, is about 25% of the menu, except NASA does their cans in pouches. Like if you go down the seafood aisle at the grocery store now, that's all in pouches. Well, NASA sends their canned products in pouches as well because it's lighter than a can. And so saving weight is valuable when you're launching into space. And then the other 50% of the menu, approximately, the standard menu, is what we call commercial off the shelf or COTS items. And the COTS items are going to be like cookies, crackers, candies, nuts, so powdered beverages. NASA doesn't do those custom. They buy those and package them for the crew members to use them on orbit. But the freeze-dried and the thermostabilized are almost all custom formulations done by the food scientist at NASA.
Food scientist, it's such an incredibly cool sounding title. And your book, Space Bites, is really a memoir about your career and what you've done as a food scientist. Tell us a bit about how you got to this position in the first place, because I am regretting my career choice now that I'm watching you at this point.
Well, it's interesting. I was, by training, I am a microbiologist undergraduate. And during my last semester, I was short 1 hour of micro elective. And I went to my advisor and he said, I'd do a white paper, just go to one of your profs or something. But I saw on the list this food microbiology course over in the College of Ag. And I said, no, I'm interested. So I went and took this food micro course and got very interested in the application of microbiology to the processing and preservation of food. One of my major professor came and lectured during that food micro course, and he said, I'm looking for graduate students. So I was all in. I went and got my master's in food science. Then I came to Houston and got my first job, and I was doing quality assurance for a hospital food plant that made food for about 5 different hospitals. And while I was working there, I started attending meetings of the local chapter of the Institute of Food Technologists, which is the professional organization for food scientists. And I met some of the food scientists who were working down at NASA. And I said, that has got to be the coolest job a food scientist could have. So if you ever have an opening, call me. And about 18 months later, I got a call. They weren't specifically looking for me, but they said, would you know anybody who would be interested? And I'm like, yeah, I would be interested. So I went down and interviewed, and that's how I got my job as a contractor at NASA. And I worked for about 4 years as a contractor, and then switched over and became the civil servant manager of the shuttle food system.
And that your career in this industry at NASA spans some 3 decades, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the things that you think about when you are planning food or planning a menu. You talked about some of the things like weight is something that you consider. What are some of the considerations that you make when you are preparing food for these shuttle astronauts or International Space Station astronauts?
Well, of course, shelf stability is huge because we don't, on shuttle and station, we don't have dedicated refrigerators and freezers for food. So the food has to be able to last a long time at room temperature, at ambient temperature. And so that's probably the biggest constraint that we have. You know, once in a while, they'll have a freezer going on a cargo ship. You know, if it's going up, it's probably bringing home medical samples or science samples. But if it's empty on the uphill trip, the crew might get some dove bites or some frozen Ooh. Treat like that. So that's like Christmas when something yeah. like that happens. Yeah. But another big constraint that we have is crumbs. So, you know, when you're preparing a food, you have to be conscious of the fact that it's going to be eaten in microgravity. And so it'll float. You know, if it's got a lot of crumbs, that's going to get loose. And, you know, they have to have a clamp on their straw on the beverage so that the fluid won't float out. And when we would prepare a formulation, we would have to look at the viscosity of it. You know, how thick is it? Will it stick to the package? When they eat out of the package, will it stick to the utensil, the fork or the spoon that they use? Because, you know, the crew always talked about, they always like had a towel handy in case something got away from them. But it's like, if you make the mess, then you've got to clean it up. So you want to be very careful about, you know, and they learn to be very careful about how they eat on orbit. So, yeah, that's a big constraint.
No coffee cake or crumble cakes or anything like that.
No, that doesn't really work. It's really funny. In the book, I talk about the fact when Pringles first came along, like prior to Pringles, all the chips were in bags. And so nobody during my career wanted to take a bag of chips. They knew it would be pulverized when it got to orbit. But when Pringles came along, a couple of the crew members were like, hey, this might work, you know, a can. And we tried to caution them. They said, well, it's canned, but there's a lot of crumbs in the bottom of that can, whether you know it or not, you know. And sure enough, and we didn't really, you know, we tried to caution them, but we didn't really say, no, you can't do it. So a couple of them took them. But, you know, they came back, oh, we should have listened to you. That was a huge mess. And you know, so after that, the word kind of got around and nobody really asked for canned potato chips again.
Yeah. And that's fine because you can't really get your hand in there anyway. So, you know, it's probably not a good deal up there anyway. So, Vicky, I mean, you mentioned that a lot of this stuff is up there almost pantry style. Is the crew assembling their meal at night, or is there actually like cooking in orbit where you grab these different ingredients and put them together?
So no, it's really all pre-prepared food. All they're really doing is maybe warming it or adding water to it. Although they have a oven to warm products on orbit, the temperatures do not get hot enough to actually cook anything.
Have you found that there's been some favorite foods for crew? And what seems to fly all the time?
When crew members first go to orbit, all the fluid shifts to the upper part of their body. So they are congested. It's like having a cold. It takes a while in microgravity for that fluid to equilibrate. And they used to make jokes that when they got on orbit, the first thing they did was line up at the bathroom because they had to eliminate fluid, right? But it interferes with their ability to smell. And so on shuttle, particularly because the flights were short, a lot of that congestion would last during most of the flight. So we had a freeze-dried shrimp cocktail. It was powdered red sauce that had horseradish in it. And so it had a nice little kick. And so it was very popular among the crew because when they were congested, that aroma still, that flavor still got through. And, you know, it's still on the menu, carries over into Space Station. But in Space Station, they have a lot more, like in shuttle, we had the little restaurant style condiments, you know, single serving, tear it open. Now on station, they have the plastic squeeze bottles, and they have a small chiller about the volume of a typical home microwave where they can keep the condiments, you know, so that they're safe to keep for a long time. And so red sauce, hot sauce, very popular among the crew members because, you know, they're eating out of packages instead of off of plates. And so that inhibits somewhat their ability to get aroma from the food. And a lot of people, well, when you have a cold, you realize how much aroma contributes to the flavor of the food because if you really got a bad cold, everything's going to taste the same because you're not getting the aroma off of it. You know, you're not getting flavor. The condiments are really important to add that flavor because they are eating out of packages. When you heat food down here, all the aroma rises and comes to your nose. In microgravity, when you heat, it can dissipate in different directions. So that's limiting what you're getting aroma-wise. And you're also in a closed environment with a lot of other odors that compete. It's not surprising that crew members anecdotally say that they feel like their taste buds were somewhat dulled when they were on orbit. And a lot of it is just because they're not getting as much aroma from the food.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. We're speaking with space chef Vicky Claris about her new book, Space Bites. Our conversation with Claris continues. Stay listening. But before we break, we want to hear from you. Be sure to check us out on our social media platforms. We're at AWTY Space on Facebook and Instagram. That's AWTY. Are We There Yet? Get it? AWTY Space. And if you have an idea for a future show, or maybe a weird or fun space question, well, send us a note. You can email the show, arewetheryet@cfpublic.org. And don't forget to rate and review this podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. That helps us get to more space enthusiasts just like you. Are We There Yet? Is back in a minute. You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. We're speaking with space chef and food scientist Vicky Claris about her new book, Space Bites, Reflections of a NASA Food Scientist. Before the break, we spoke about her journey to becoming a food scientist and how some of the food she prepared was sent to space. Now she tells us more about the relationship between food and psychology and some of the astronauts' favorite meals. So there's all these different considerations that go into this menu. We talked about kind of weight considerations, these olfactory considerations, and all of this. But I've got to wonder if there's some sort of psychological or even cultural considerations you make. Because I think, you know, when I miss home, there's a particular comfort food that I turn to when I'm thinking about my family. Is that the same for astronauts in the way that you prepare meals for them?
Absolutely. I mean, once on shuttle, not so much, because the shuttle flights were short. You know, most of the astronauts, you know, they were kind of like, oh, it's a camping trip. I can find something I like. No big deal, you know, off the list. But once we went into long duration space flight, you know, 6 months and now some over a year up there, then the psychology of the food became a lot more important. I can remember the first shuttle astronauts, when we first said we were going to build the space station, NASA sent some of their NASA astronauts to stay on Mir, on the Russian space station, to get experience in long duration space flight. And I can remember some of those first crew members, we only got to send a very limited amount of NASA food for them. And I went to them and asked them, what do you want us to send? Oh, well, I'm too busy learning Russian and learning about the mirror. Just go look at my old shuttle menu, send something off that, it'll be fine. So that's what we did. And some of the folks who came back after being on orbit for, I think on Mir, they were staying about 4.5 months at a time, but they came back and said, ooh, I should have paid more attention. You know, in the long duration, the food is much more important because of the psychology. And for long duration, especially on ISS, the crew members will take special items in their preference containers for holidays, for birthdays, for other special occasions, because the psychology is so important. And the shared meals, the psychology of a shared meal among the crew becomes a lot more important on long duration. And for a mission to Mars, it's going to be huge. Yeah, the psychology of the food is going to be huge. And that's why, you know, the ESA astronauts and the Japanese astronauts in Canada, when they fly, NASA allows them to send their country to send some items for them so that they have some, you know, cultural stuff as much as can be supported by shelf stable. But yeah, because we do know for long duration, the psychology is very important.
So Vicky, we're talking about kind of, you know, stays on the International Space Station where there's, you know, frequent deliveries of supplies like food. But as, you know, NASA sets its sights on places like the moon and Mars for longer duration missions. What kind of challenges are there when it comes to food, and how is some of the work that you've done laying the groundwork to get us there?
So the challenge, the main challenge, moon is not so much of a challenge because it's close. But the challenge is for the real challenge for the food system is for Mars. So right now with current propulsion technology, it takes about 6 months to get to Mars. And you got to stay there for around 24 months to get Earth and Mars close together again so you can come home. So you're looking at roughly a 3-year mission for that first crew. And if you take into account that they won't be able to take everything with them, a lot of the supplies are going to have to be pre-positioned, kind of like in the movie The Martian, where you saw all this stuff was waiting for them when they got there. Well, that's probably going to have to be the case. And depending on how they pre-position it, if they use a chemical rocket, it'll be quicker. If they use a solar-powered rocket, that'll make the time take longer to pre-position. And so if they pre-position a lot of the food and then, you know, then send the crew after they confirm that it's there, what you're looking at for that return flight, for that 6 months home at the end of the mission, that food could be anywhere from 5 to 7 years old, depending on, you know, how it was pre-positioned, when it was pre-positioned. And we can make food that is safe to eat from a microbiological perspective by using freeze drying, shelf, you know, thermostabilization. But what you can't stop, you can stop the microbial growth. What you can't stop is the chemical changes that occur in the food. So over that length of time, the quality is going to degrade, you know, color, texture, flavor is going to change because of the chemical changes, and not in a good way, not like fine wine that gets better with age. And they're also, you know, so that's the challenge. And also nutrients, not all, but some nutrients will degrade due to the chemical changes. And so that is the challenge, how to have a food system for that return flight that will still be high enough quality that they'll want to eat enough so that they'll be high performing even on that return flight. So that's a big challenge for a food system for Mars.
And what about the prospects of growing food? I mean, would that be sustainable at the level that you would need to support a crew for that long? I know there is some agriculture happening on the International Space Station, but it's very, very small scale, right?
Yes, very small volume. They have the veggie and they grow. What they grow up there is basically what we call pick and eat crops. So like lettuce, you know, stuff that doesn't really require cherry tomatoes that you can just eat without processing it. And the challenge for that first mission to Mars is that there's not going to be the infrastructure there on the surface. To really sustain a crew, you're going to have a full-blown habitat and a full-blown, system for growing plants. And we're just not going to have that initially. So really, on the trip to Mars and on the return trip, I'm sure they'll be growing stuff on the vehicle. But again, the volume is going to be small. So it's going to be almost more psychological than it is a significant part of their nutrition. Yeah. And growing things, you know, we have crew members, once they got the veggie up on ISS and started growing things, crew members would report how nice it was to have green growing things because nothing changes in their environment. You know, they used to joke and say that the plants were the only thing that changed other than the length of their hair on orbit, because you're looking at the interior of the same vehicle day after day after day. Yeah. So they said the growing things were a very nice psychological boost.
But still need folks like you creating that shelf stable stuff to get them to and from, right? That's very important to this plan.
Right now, that's the truth. Yes.
Quick precursor to my next question. Have you tried the food before it leaves your lab?
Absolutely. In fact, I did ground-based studies where for 30 days I ate nothing but flight food. And that was actually to support a medical study. But yeah, so we do internal taste panels all the time. We have sensory booths set up where you go in and you sit and you taste the food and, you know, you rate it on the computer. And you are separated from everybody else so that you're not influenced by other people in your scoring. And we also have volunteers who come in. Like when we're developing a new product, we want to get a broad opinion, not just the food scientist in the lab. And so we have volunteers that work at the Johnson Space Center and will come in and do taste panels for us and try the products. And we use a 9-point hedonic scale, which is pretty standard in the sensory industry. And so we taste it all the time.
So now that I know that you've tasted it, here's a hypothetical question that maybe will become a real world question soon. You and I are heading on a mission. We're going to space. What are you bringing for us to eat?
What am I bringing for us?
Yeah.
You know, what are my favorites?
What are your favorites?
Well, we have a nice beefsteak. It's an irradiated product. It's shelf stable. And we have great macaroni and cheese, which is one of my personal favorites. Tortillas are the main bread product that we use. We found tortillas were much better than bread because they don't make as much crumbs in microgravity. So they use tortillas for sandwiches instead of bread. But my favorite by far, when we started formulating our own thermostabilized products, we decided for long duration that we needed some desserts that could be warmed up, because we thought a warm dessert from a psychology perspective is pretty important. And prior to that, all we had was like M&Ms and commercial cookies, nothing that you could warm up. You couldn't have a warm dessert. So one of the first things we formulated was a cherry blueberry cobbler, and it's awesome. It's one of my personal favorites.
Well, Vicki, you bring dinner and dessert. I will bring the shrimp cocktail ring, and I will see you in orbit. Vicki Claris, her book is Space Bites, Reflections of a NASA Food Scientist. Vicki, this was an awesome conversation. I am now starving, but thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to this show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. A few months ago on the program, we spoke with two chefs at the Kennedy Space Center who cook for astronauts before they leave this planet. We'll link to that conversation on our website. Visit cfpublic.org/arewetherayet. Are We There Yet is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Our intern is Emily Ching. Editorial guidance from LaToya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.